to the upper 90s to around 100 degrees south. Lows overnight will range from around 60 degrees north to the upper 70s and low 80s in southern areas of the region. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, mostly sunny, hot and humid with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Look for a high in the low to mid 90s. The wind light and from the north. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The low 65. The wind from the northeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy and cooler with a high of 78 and a northeast wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 57 and an east wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Thursday, partly sunny with a high around 80 and a light east wind. Thursday night and Friday, partly cloudy with a low Thursday night in the upper 60s and a high Friday in the upper 80s. Friday night through Saturday night, mostly clear, warmer. We'll see a high Saturday in the low 90s. The lows Friday night and Saturday night will be in the low 70s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana were in the low 80s to the mid 90s. Sunshine reported across both states. At Rockford, it was 86, 87 at O'Hare, 88 at Peoria. Mattoon reported 89 degrees and at Alton, 91. South Bend reported 82 degrees. Lafayette and Indianapolis had 88 degrees, 90 at Terre Haute, 96 at Evansville. Willard Airport reported 87 degrees at the top of the hour. The dew point, 73, giving us a heat index of 94. The relative humidity, 62%. The wind variable at about 5 miles an hour. And the barometric pressure, 29.98 and steady. And at 12:39 Central Time, 90 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The sky is sunny. Illinois lawmakers surely took a collective sigh of relief yesterday. A potentially dicey political fight was avoided with the Illinois Supreme Court's decision to uphold the state's infrastructure program. The High Court unanimously reversed an appellate court's ruling that struck it down. Amanda Vinicky has more on the billions of dollars in projects and thousands of related jobs hinging on the legal decision.
Politicians and unions alike celebrated 2 years ago when a major infrastructure program passed, the likes of which Illinois hadn't seen in a decade. That delay created a pent-up demand for repairing roads, bridges, and new buildings. Financing them during the heat of an economic downturn was seen as a way to get people to work. But shortly after the measure's passage, a lawsuit was filed to stop it. Construction projects have continued in the interim, but president of Illinois' AFL-CIO, Mike Kerrigan, says for workers in building trades unions waiting 2 years for the outcome of that lawsuit.
It was very frustrating and stressful.
The suit was filed by Rocky Wirtz, the owner of the Chicago Blackhawks hockey team. More pertinent to this story, he also owns a liquor distributorship, and that's what put him on the offensive. In order to come up with the $31 billion needed to fund the long list of construction projects, the General Assembly passed a variety of schemes to bring in more revenue. Legalization of video poker payouts, a $20 increase to renew a driver's plate and driver's license, a higher tax on candy, soft drinks, and hygiene products. And here's what caught Wirtz's attention. Higher taxes for booze. The state tax on liquor went up by less than 5 cents a gallon. The tax on wine rose by 66 cents a gallon. And the tax on liquor, it was up by $4.05 a gallon. A businessman like Works calculated that in a tight economy, shoppers would be less likely to purchase liquor because the price on it had gone up so much more than the price of beer and wine. Either that or his distributorship would need to eat more of the cost. That this inequality of tax hikes broke the Constitution's requirement for uniform taxation was one of the arguments Wirtz's lawyer, Sam Vinson, made before the Supreme Court. In the decision, justices knocked that argument down, holding that legislators have a rational reason to levy a higher tax on the more intoxicating spirit. While that may have been Wirtz's reason for filing the lawsuit, it wasn't the crux of Vinson's argument.
There are certainly situations where people reach compromises, and in our society they have to reach compromises. But a compromise where you have to vote for things that are unpopular in order to get things that are popular is a mistake.
Vinson's main contention, the one that the appellate court had agreed with, was that having such a wide array of funding streams violated the Constitution's rule requiring legislation be kept to a single subject. The rule is to prevent what's known as log rolling. Vinson argued that's just what legislators did. Rolling the controversial legalization of video poker in was something they all wanted, projects for their districts.
If you're in a position where the only way you can get your project is to vote for the package, that defines successful log rolling.
Chicago architect Dan Burnham famously once said, make no little plans. The plaintiff's approach to the single subject clause appears to be the opposite, that the General Assembly can only make little plans.
That's Assistant Attorney General Richard Huzzack, who says it's logical, not unconstitutional, that the funding streams and the projects be tied together.
You can't spend the money unless you have it.
In the unanimous opinion authored by Justice Ann Burke, the court agreed. Rather than finding it to be an instance of log rolling, the opinion says there is a natural and legitimate connection. It's all part of the infrastructure program. Here's Justice Bob Thomas speaking to that point during May's oral arguments.
This is a once-in-a-decade capital works bill. I mean, by its very nature, it's going to be enormous, right?
Wirtz's legal team had raised a variety of other legal challenges, too. The court decision leaves him with little wiggle room to go forward pursuing those. Although it wasn't necessary, justices discounted each of them as well. Governor Pat Quinn says the ruling ensures 240,000 workers will keep their jobs.
And now we have a law that's a model, really, for building in our state. And in every other state, if you don't invest in improving your roads and taking care of your bridges, bad things happen. And we don't want that to happen in Illinois.
Getting the package through the first time was difficult, but turnover in the House and Senate, January's income tax hike, and the General Assembly's recent approval of 5 new casinos would have been a major roadblock to doing it again. With the Supreme Court's ruling, it's a non-issue. Construction projects and the jobs created by them can keep going. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
In Europe, politicians are still arguing over a second bailout plan for Greece. They're also trying to stop investor panic from spilling over to other economies in the Eurozone, specifically Italy and Spain. Zanny Mitten-Beddoes of The Economist spoke with NPR's Mary Louise Kelly about the European debt crisis.
So tell us exactly what is happening in Italy and why European leaders are suddenly so worried.
Well, I wish we knew exactly what was happening. There's been a panic, basically, over Italy in the last couple of days, particularly yesterday. A slump in the Italian stock market, Italian bonds soared to euro-era highs. Everyone rushed to what they saw as safer assets, which within Europe was German government bonds. And the real question is kind of what's caused this? And the immediate trigger was a couple of developments last week. First of all, as you know, the rating agencies downgraded Portugal's debt to junk status, which caused some nervousness. Then there was a big political spat in Italy at the end of the last week between Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi and the Finance Minister Tremonti, in part over the Italian austerity budget. And that kind of further added to the nervousness. But I think the real underlying reason is the continued uncertainty that investors have about what on earth the Europeans are doing to deal broadly with their debt crisis. The proposed solutions are very muddled, whether it's on Greece or anything else. There's new solutions pretty much every couple of days. No one knows where policymakers are going. They keep changing their minds. And so far, that uncertainty has been kind of focused on Greece. But I think investors suddenly looked at the chaos over Greece and thought, oh my goodness, if they can't deal with Greece, what on earth about another big economy with a heavy debt burden, Italy, a much, much bigger economy, and they suddenly caught fright.
A much, much bigger economy, as you say. I mean, Italy's economy is way bigger than Greece and Portugal, the countries that have been, you know, more recently in the headlines. What would it mean for the Eurozone, broadly speaking, if things in Italy took a turn for the worse?
It would be a real disaster. I think there's absolutely no other word for it. I mean, Greece is a minnow. And Italy is, you know, I'm not a fisherman, but it's a huge fish. It's a very, very,
the,
very
the tuna of Europe, as it
it's
were.
It's the tuna, if you will, or the bass of Europe. But it's a very big fish. It is, as you say, Europe's third largest economy. It's the biggest bond market. Italy has a debt to GDP ratio of 120%. So it's a very indebted economy. Sounds somewhat familiar like Greece. It's also a stagnant economy. It hasn't really grown at all for years. But the big difference is that Italy has lived with a very high debt burden for a long time. time. Its budget is in much better shape. It has a much healthier banking system. It's a conservative banking system. And it has very high domestic savings. So Italians save a lot, and that essentially funds their government's debt. But all of those factors have made people worry less about Italy. They thought, well, Italians, yes, they have a huge debt burden, but they'll be able to service it. But if interest rates rise a lot, if the cost of that debt blows out, then suddenly it becomes very hard to see how they do service it. And so suddenly what seemed like a stable high debt situation looks much, much more worrying.
And just quickly, Zanny, European finance chiefs did meet yesterday. They are trying to find some sort of path through this. Did they make any progress?
Well, they had a typically European reaction. You know, it was a statement issued after, I think, 7 hours of discussion. Started off with a very nice-sounding sentence. Ministers reaffirmed their absolute commitment to safeguard financial stability in the eurozone. But after that, there wasn't very much detail. Vague promises and failure to agree even on Greece, which was the subject of the meeting yesterday. And I think investors are beginning to say, this isn't good enough. We really need to know what you guys are going to do to get to see light at the end of the tunnel of this ongoing crisis.
Zanny Minton-Beddoes is a reporter with The Economist. She spoke with NPR's Mary Louise Kelly. More than 7,000 individuals and teams competed in Google's Global Science Fair. As NPR's Wendy Kaufman reports, it was a sweep for the women.
17-year-old Shree Bose of Fort Worth, Texas, took home the grand prize for her work on drug resistance in treating ovarian cancer. To say she was surprised would be an understatement.
I was. I mean, to be presenting in front of Nobel laureates and to be judged by them and then to be picked as a science fair winner by them, that just doesn't happen every day.
Bose's first foray into science fair competition occurred when she was in second grade. She tried to find out if kids would eat more spinach if it were blue instead of green, but she neglected to water her plants. Today, her research is a lot more sophisticated, involving cancer cells and proteins. She won a $50,000 scholarship, along with a 10-day expedition to the Galapagos for her efforts.
Throughout my entire life, I've always loved science. I've loved watching it, doing it, understanding it mostly. And now to be able to explain science to other people, that's the biggest step for me as a scientist.
Some 10,000 students entered the competition, and in the end, three young women, including Bose, were declared the winners in their age brackets. One of the others looked at how different marinades could reduce carcinogens in grilled chicken, while the third winner examined the effect of air pollution on asthma. World-class science and engineering companies are always on the lookout for talent, and they hope competitions like this one encourage more young people to study science and engineering. Wendy Kaufman, NPR News.
Thanks to you, Illinois Public Media WILL surpassed the membership goal of $2.1 million by more than $25,000. We appreciate your support. It really makes a difference.
And here is the writer's...